Well, good morning, 606. Kelly O'Connell. Good morning to you. Hope you are getting ready for Thanksgiving, which is just hours away. I've got a couple of guests today, and the guests include Craig Buckingham, who's making an announcement, and also Bob Jeska. I asked him if he would come on and talk a little bit about the Gospel Rescue mission and let people know what's going on down there so that we can be mindful of the people that have less at this time of year. Of course, it's getting colder out there, and there's always a need, widows, orphans, handicapped, various people that have addictions, the unemployed. This is a tough town to find a job in. So anyway, we're going to get into that. Now, I had mentioned, I had brought this book down, and the book was, I had mentioned it before. So I put this show together. I put two shows together, the show tomorrow, which is pre-recorded, kind of on the history of Thanksgiving and some of the different elements of it, which I think that you will find notable, at least enjoyable. And so anyway, this is a book that I had gotten into, and I just want to mention it a little bit before I forget that I was ever thinking about talking about it. And I mentioned the name of it, but I didn't have it in the studio the day that I was talking about it. I want to tell you a little bit about that, but let me get into some, and Bob Jeska is going to be here in about 10 minutes. So, or about 20 minutes. So, we're going to get into, the Gospel Rescue Mission, et cetera. Some of your headlines though for you. And let's see here. Everybody knows that what's going on is in the Middle East is really kind of bubbling under the surface. And so we need to be cognizant of that. The thing that's going on in Chicago, and I don't know if you'd heard about that, but this is basically this situation where this guy is being charged, a police officer, with murder. And so he had shot someone something like 16 times, and they show the video, and you can't really, obviously it's one of these kind of grainy videos where you can't really see everything, but the upshot was that the kid was just walking along, and I apparently the police officer's trying to get his attention and cannot do so. And at that point, just start shooting at the kid. And you know, it's just one of these situations where you can't tell what happened beforehand, you know, what led to the point. But the kid did not appear to be menacing. And so it made it look like just an assassination, and the guy's attorney, as as he should, had said that this is not a murder trial, or it's not basically, from what I can understand, he's saying it's not a murder one trial. It's got to be murder two. There was something he was reacting to that you can't really see off camera, but let me play a clip for you on this.
Chaos in Chicago.
16 shots.
Protesters chanting and marching throughout the streets after police released a dash cam video showing a white police officer shooting and killing a black teenager.
Well, Kelly Bride is standing by for us with the very latest on this. Kelly, this definitely developed all night. It did indeed. Good morning to you. Chicago's hope is that the people can move forward now in dealing with this very serious issue in a calm and peaceful manner. After a night of tense face-offs between police and protesters, Chicago is relatively calm this morning. There were fears that demonstrators would erupt in violence, but demonstrators kept the peace. But protesters took to the streets after a judge ordered the release of this disturbing video that you're looking at. It shows how a white police officer shot down a black teenager as he apparently walks away from him on a Chicago street. The shooting took place 13 months ago, but it wasn't released until yesterday. Officer Jason Van Dyke is seen shooting 17-year-old
McQuan McDonald
16 times, even after he had fallen to the ground. Officer Van Dyke is now charged with first-degree murder. Still, some residents telling Fox News they want more action taken.
Rahm Emanuel needs to be impeached. He knew this happened 12 months ago.
This moment doesn't speak to who we are and what we can become. I believe this is a moment that can build bridges of understanding rather than become a barrier of misunderstanding.
Some of the protesters say the other police officers who were on the scene at the time of the shooting did nothing to protect Laquan McDonald's life. They believe those officers should be charged with accessory to the crime of murder. And that's the situation that people will be following as well.
All right. So, I mean, it's just one of these videos, whether it tells the truth or not, you know, put it in into quotation marks. You know, you don't know. You weren't there, so you don't know what happened before the video started, but it certainly looks like just somebody pulling out a gun. It looked like the kid was just kind of like walking past, like maybe the cop was calling out, come here, whatever. In theory, the police officer in his defense could have thought he had a weapon in his pocket or in his hand, but it certainly looked from the video like he was just kind of gunned down. So anyway, but you know, there have been people that have been drumming and, you know, there's just been an enormous amount of, I guess this at some point, you know, you give people power as police officers and some small minority of them are going to misuse it. And some tiny fraction are going to kill someone in an indefensible way. But you've got this constant drumbeat of Black Lives Matter and, you know, these cops are brutalizing everybody and everything. And it's making things more dangerous out there. And, you know, the murder rate's up across the United States in these big cities. And they say it's up because the police feel like they're under scrutiny. They can't use their old policing techniques. And it's just caused a lot of chaos. All right. I want to get into this book because Bob Jessica is about to get here. And, well, let's take a break so I can find the exact place in the book. And so we can, pardon me, so I can let you know exactly where, just get right to the point. But there's some things. What I want to explain to you is the difference. I mean, we in this country, we understand generally speaking, even people, a lot of people who are not Christians understand the basic outline of how people are saved or how we view in this culture, because we have a cultural background of Christianity. We understand just kind of almost by instinct the basic approach of the religion to these different issues. It's radically different in Islam, and I wanted to let you know where that comes from. 6:15, so that you can understand to some extent the motivations of these people and the explanation of some of their actions, which might be totally indefensible as well, but it's good to understand where other people are coming from so you can make guesses about what they're going to do in the future. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, Callie O'Connell, 523-1450, 523-1450, and be back to talk about that and from my book, Islamic Messianism. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, I just want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving before you fade off into the sunrise.
Thanks, Greg. You too, man.
Hey, man, and keep doing what you're doing, and go easy on that wild turkey tomorrow.
All right, Greg. Have a great holiday.
All right, brother. You too.
Thanks.
Adios.
All right, bye. All right, so I do have Bob Jeska. He's going to be here in a minute for Gospel Rescue Mission. But speaking of rescue and the gospel and everything, it just as an overview for people who don't understand, the Bible claims that if a person puts faith in Jesus, this New Testament, that person is saved by that faith. That's, you know, it's a intellectual, emotional commitment, you know, spiritual, if you want to put it in those terms. But it's, you know, an assent and an acceptance of this. And that's the model of the New Testament. All right. In Islam, you have something that's radically different. Now, I'll just get into this book. It's called Islamic Messianism, The Idea of the Mahdi in 12er Shiism. And it's by Abdulaziz Abdul Hussein Sakadina. And it's published in about 1980. All right. So first thing the author notes is the similarity between the Messiah in Islam and the Messiah messianic or the Messiah idea in the Bible. And then he says the Islamic doctrine of salvation. The Islamic doctrine of salvation does not conceive of man as a sinner who must be saved through spiritual regeneration, which is, you know, exactly what the New Testament teaches. Rather, it holds that man is not dead in sin, so he needs no spiritual rebirth, nor does the doctrine conceive of salvation in national terms, say, in like Israel. So, all right, so the basic emphasis of Islamic salvation lies instead in the historical responsibility of its followers, namely the establishment of the ideal religious political community, the Ummah, with a worldwide membership of those who believe in God and his revelation through Muhammad. This is extremely important to understand. All right, a person is not saved through, people are not dead in their sins. Because that just doesn't happen in the view of Islam. But they're disassociated from the Savior, from the salvation of God. And so how are they saved? They are saved by becoming part of the Ummah, which is a political slash religious group. So you enter into the Ummah and you become part of this group. Now, another thing that this guy says is that, okay, so most of the early discussions on the imam, the leader, the proper leadership of Islam took at first political form, but eventually the debate encompassed the religious implications of salvation. All right, this is true of all Islamic concepts, since Islam is a religious phenomenon was subsequent to Islam as a political reality. All right, so my point being, it is extremely important to remember that political Islam develops before religious Islam does. That's important to remember, too. So what you're dealing with in Islam is an attempt to get people into the Ummah, into this group. All right. So here's one more thing that he says. As long as the community continued to be fully committed to the promulgation and observance of the law, or the statement, the restatement of the law, and making people observe the law, the Sharia, its salvation was guaranteed. Okay, so how do you get saved in Islam? You get saved by either entering the UMA by your own decision or being forced into the UMA. And then you're part of this religious/political movement or political/religious movement. And you can then be saved if it doesn't matter what the leader is like, as long as you're following the Sharia law. That's all you need to be in the people of God and to follow the law of God. Now, so that is why it's radically different than anything that we know about over here. And that's why when people are being killed, it is, part of that is a statement of God's, it is a statement from these people that you're unacceptable. You're not part of this UMA. You're not part of this group, but there is the possibility, when you look at that, the conversion by sword is possible, because what you do in Islam is you submit. You submit to God, you bend the knee. And it doesn't matter if you do it, because you believe in it or because you're forced to do it. You enter the Ummah and then you're saved. I just wanted to, I've had this book kind of hanging around my house, and I wanted people to understand there is this incredibly radical different view of life from the Muslim perspective. And that's, at some level, if they could convert people by swords, and not all Muslims want to do this, by the way, but the people that are radicals, that are hardliners, they want to do that in part because they think it's their duty. They think they have the right to do it. And they don't believe in human rights from that worldview, but they are trying to, and that's why I was telling you before, I've told you a number of times, ISIS does follow Sharia law, whether you want to believe it or not. Even some of the craziest things that you see happening over there is a foundation in Sharia law. So anyway, I've got Bob Jeske here. We're going to come back and talk to him about the Gospel Rescue Mission. 6:29 on the button, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, 523-1450, and we'll be right back. Well, good morning, 6:32, and I thought it would be appropriate if it would be appropriate to bring Bob Jeske on, because he's running with some help, but running the Gospel Mission, and it's that time of year. So, good morning to you, Bob.
Morning, Kerry.
How you doing?
Good.
Kelly, if you don't mind.
Kelly. it is early.
It is early. I do have a pot of coffee back there,
but I arrived too late to.
Yeah.
Get any of that.
All right. That's no problem. You were sitting in your car listening about the UMA.
I was.
So all right. So you're a military guy, and you've run for politics before. So you've had quite the experience in life. But you're running the Gospel Mission. Doing the function of a pastor and a missionary. But when you think about Islam compared to Christianity, what are your thoughts?
Oh, gee whiz.
If you could say, or would you prefer not to?
Well, I would prefer not to, but I'll
that's fine. You don't have to. That's fine. Well,
I'll only suggest that Christianity is the one faith that requires an individual decision. Religions like Islam, as you pointed out in the passage that you read, only requires that you join a club, and as soon as you join the club, then you have salvation, and that's fundamentally out of line with the individual salvation that we believe.
Yeah, in Christianity, nobody could be converted by sword. The idea is nonsensical, but in Islam, it would make perfect sense. Islam means submission.
Right.
And so if you're, for example, also if you're a Christian or a Jew living in a Muslim land, you enter the treaty, the agreement not to wage war against the state, and you pay your jizya, your poll tax.
Correct. And the other thing that you have to appreciate with that worldview, there is very little room, if any, to discuss compromise or negotiation. These people just aren't, they're not built that way.
Yeah.
Their faith makes them completely different in that regard.
They believe in a couple of different things. One of his kismet is fate. It's a hardcore fate where your fate is set. It's like a destiny, and it cannot be changed. So there's a lot of fatalism that's in the Middle Eastern countries. And such as it is, there's a little analysis on Islam. So how are things down at the rescue mission?
It's going very well. We this time of the year, as you may well know, we try to issue a coat and a blanket or a blanket to everyone leaving the mission and continuing their journey. And the shelves are fairly
fair.
Sparse. Yes.
Fair.
If you saw the article in the Sun News a few days ago, we had no coats and just a couple of blankets. And as a result of that article, we've gotten a fairly good supply, but it's not going to be enough to last us through February.
What are your basic needs right now? If people are going to give material or give a little bit of cash, what are your needs?
Well, we just installed a $194,000 solar electricity generation system on top of the shelter, and we've only got $90,600 of that paid for by contribution. So we need help there. The good news is that we won't have to pay an electric bill for the shelter for the next 25 years. We'll save $100,000 in utility costs alone in just the next five.
Wow, that's quite a bit.
It is. So come and be a part of that. We are well on the way to our Thanksgiving Meals on Wheels preparation. Our cooks have been preparing that meal since Sunday.
What kind of, I mean, is it just traditional
it is.
Thanksgiving fare?
It is. Turkey, gravy, mashed potatoes, cranberry sauce, pie. And last year, we delivered right at 2,000. Well, we prepared about 2,000 meals altogether, 4,000, over 4,000 between Thanksgiving and Christmas days, which are the 2 days that we help out the city's kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And prepare and deliver Meals on Wheels for the city. And so in addition to the meals that we normally prepare, we prepare to deliver to about 4,000 meals.
That's quite a bit.
It
is. How big is your kitchen?
It's not much bigger than your office. it's a relatively small kitchen, which is why we have to start early.
Have you guys ever thought about expanding that?
We have. We just can't afford it at this point. That has been on our mind. The building that we're in is about 25 years old, so it's starting to come to the end of its useful service life. But we do need help for volunteers to either stage meals or deliver meals. Tomorrow we have an orientation meeting at 9 o'clock in the chapel, and the same on Christmas Day, the 25th of December. We need volunteers to prepare and stage and deliver meals. Christmas Day is a little harder because people celebrate Christmas in the morning.
You need the help of atheists.
We'll take anybody's help. But those are the two events that are coming up.
All right. And what's the number and address?
It's 1050 West Amador is the address, and the chapel is in the first building on your left-hand side. I'm in the driveway. The phone number is 523-7727. And check us out on the website. There's a lot of news on there as well. It's www.lcgrm.org.
All right, talking to Bob Jeska. He's the head of the gospel mission in town, and it's that time of the year to think about maybe digging deep and helping them a little bit. It is 6:38. You're listening to the Kelly O'Connell Show on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 to call in, 523-1450, and we'll be right back.
I am trying the long, hard day.
We got that segment done. You know, I had that trouble too. But the one guy that I've found, Tony Levitino. He and I are starting our own little book club because we have some common interests. Tony, yeah, he is. And he is one guy.
folks. So it's 6:40. Bob Jeska here, talking about the rescue mission. It's 6:41. We are, of course, going to have some big games on that day as well. NFL, et cetera. So be prepared for that. And I'm just looking for your temp right here from my little app on the phone, and it is telling me it's loading a little bit slow here. But anyway, I'll give you the temperature when it loads up. But I guess, I don't know, you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving is kind of a different time of the year, and 37 degrees, by the way. So Bob, when you guys are planning your budget, is there more spent during the last couple of months of the year for Christmas and Thanksgiving, or is the budget pretty steady? Because I know you're helping people every day of the year.
Actually, we run a slight deficit through about October, and just our normal operating costs put us in the red through the greatest portion of the year. This year, we've had a number of incidents that have increased our maintenance budget. We had three water leaks, and the plumbing repairs and the blacktop that we had to replace cost us about $22,000, which wasn't in the budget this year. So we generally, if for maintenance alone, we're running a negative.
If people want to contribute to that. Okay. So what's a daily schedule down there at the rescue mission? I mean, people are involved in the mission. Do they have to go to church? Is that part of it?
The people who stay at the mission do. We require them to go, if they're going to stay long-term, which is their choice. The commitment that they make is to go to church, twice a week, plus, attend Celebrate Recovery, which we do on Friday mornings. 2 hours of Celebrate Recovery. Jan Thomas from Mesilla Park Community Church proctors that for us. Several days in the week, in the morning, after breakfast, we've got Bible study. There's probably no single day that is like another day, because there's always activities that require people who stay at the mission to exert some energy for an activity that they're a part of. For example, a couple times a month, members of the mission pick up trash along the 2.5 mile stretch of Trevise. Mm-hmm. They do that as a community service, but that's the mission's responsibility, that stretch of Trevise from Missouri all the way to the Coles Turn. And so we get people that are at the mission involved in doing something for it's bigger than themselves, without the expectation that they're going to get paid for it. And that selfless service is the start of a process that we hope will end in a decision to be saved.
Yeah. There's gospel missions across the United States.
There is.
Is it a community? Is it an organization, or is it just the name that is applied to these similar undertakings?
It's all that. It's a loose confederation of organizations that have a common worldview and a common purpose. There's about 300 of them in North America, but we are worldwide. The Association of Gospel Rescue Missions in North America includes mostly missions in the United States, but some in Canada and Mexico.
So, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a religious undertaking, number one. Number two, it is a humanitarian, and it is charitable. To what extent do you guys interact with the government? I don't know if people would understand that.
We interact to the extent that we are, we support the community and the government as a result. The picking up trash is a part of supporting a government interest in cleaning up and keeping Las Cruces clean.
And we do have a phone call. Hold on 1 second. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Sharon. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
Happy Thanksgiving,
Happy
Sharon.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Go ahead.
Thanks. I would like to ask your guest what, in his experience, is really the greatest misconception of people that live at the rest of Mission, the homeless people. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Thanks, Sharon.
Oh, yikes. That's going to require me to put myself
right.
in the mind
of
people that...
Here's something to throw out there. People go to the rescue mission because they're lazy bums.
Oh no, that's not true. That is, there are people at the mission for a whole host of reasons. The primary one is that they've lived a life apart from God, and many of them are just tired of living their life that way and putting up with the results. And most of all the ones that I talk to that enter our program, I tell them they may think they're here just for free food and free clothing and a day, but God has chosen them to be there for a reason. And, they have an opportunity to not have to worry about, those physical needs, and they've got a chance to evaluate their life.
All right, so it's deeply spiritual in that sense. It kind of reminds me of this poem, The Hound of Heaven by Francis Thompson. I fled him down the nights and down the days. I fled him down the arches of the years. I fled him down the labyrinthine ways of my own mind. And in the midst of tears, I hid from him, et cetera, et cetera. But it kind of reminds me that so some of these people are very haunted by this lack of spirituality and a lack of having a core in their life.
I don't know that they would characterize it that way. They just know that the things that they have been doing to themselves and to others hasn't brought them peace, and they're ready to try something else. And the one misconception I think that the public would have is that there are not people who are just as lost here in the United States as there are in deepest, darkest Africa or in the rainforests of South America. Churches do not have to send missionaries across the around the world in order to have an active ministry, because there are Americans who are just as bereft.
All right. So which brings up another question that I know that you've probably thought about and had to deal with. We are at a time when we're increasingly more agnostic and atheistic in this culture, and there's a huge push in pop culture, and in to a certain extent the government, to totally disassociate Christianity from the culture and keep it inside people's houses. How does that affect what you're doing?
That seems to be a cycle. A student of history will appreciate that. This move to a secular view of the world is not new. It comes in cycles. In the early part of the 20th century, at the start of the progressive movement, there was a similar effort, and it doesn't really lead anywhere. But every few generations, people have to learn the same lesson.
I know that people will come up to you and say, it's good that you help these people, but how dare you force your beliefs on them?
Exactly.
That's got to be a very consistent thing. And I think the people that would say it would be, to a certain extent, filled with righteousness and anger. I mean, you know.
Well, they have a worldview, and they believe it. It doesn't comport with a Christian's view of the world. But that has never been the case.
Yeah, but so how would an atheistic or an agnostic rescue mission, not gospel rescue mission, but how would that work from your experience, your opinion?
Well, we do have people who aren't believers that help just because they know it's the right thing to do. We don't require, there's no religious test for people to come to the mission. There's no religious test for people to help at the mission.
Stay there, they're going to go to church.
They do. Right? They do.
Folks, we're talking to Bob Jeska from the Gospel Rescue Mission. Okay, so you know, Sharon asked this question. In your mind, that you're dealing with people with problems, and you're kind of analyzing it, what are you running in your mind? What are you running up against? I mean, obviously, we're all human beings. We all suffer from the same basic human nature with all of its flaws. What you're dealing with resistance. Somebody wants to maybe get some help, but they don't want to change. What's in your mind?
Our program recognizes the reality of human nature. Human beings operate roughly on three levels. Maslow said there was five levels.
Hierarchy,
right. The hierarchy needs. Well, there's really three. There's the physical,
yeah.
You know, food, water, clothing, shelter.
Yeah.
Then survival. Yeah, exactly. And then there is an emotional level, which is psychologically driven, self-esteem,
mm-hmm.
Having a job,
mm-hmm.
having a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher order is a moral fiber,
mm-hmm.
a moral view. And every issue, every problem, and I defy anybody to define a problem that does not affect, is not affected by those three levels in the human animal. And at the mission, we address all three of them at the same time, which makes us unique in this environment, because a lot of government programs give people stuff.
Yeah.
There are other programs that give people an emotional stability. There are churches that provide the moral guidance, but there are very few organizations that deal with all three simultaneously. And that's really fundamentally the only way that you can beat an addiction. Someone has to want to change, and change to what?
Yeah. So that brings up something I was thinking the whole time that you've been talking about this is it just seems to me like we're in addiction. We're in overachieving. We're over busy. We're preoccupied. We're no longer kind of an intimate friendship, family oriented society like we used to have. And, but we're an addiction driven society. What's behind that in your opinion?
I think it is self. Every time I see a young person with their faces glued to one of these, devices nowadays, I'm just saddened that they're completely immersed. They think they're being entertained, but they are immersed in themselves,
mm-hmm.
and it conditions the people that are that do that as a rule. It conditions them to only be
self-oriented,
absorbed.
But
it's completely self-absorbed.
If you're self-absorbed, then at some part of your person, you're thinking, I'm meeting my own needs.
Or yeah, exactly, you are.
I've got within my control the means to meet my needs.
Right, you are. But what that does is makes your worldview so very narrow. It's just me,
well, have
and
you,
me.
You've noticed there's a lot of rudeness out there, and I just read an article that said rudeness spreads like a sickness, like a cold or the flu. When you're around people that are rude, you tend to be more rude, and it just kind of builds on itself. And it seems like within this self-absorption, we are living in rude times.
We are. Well, yeah. Look at these college campuses that are sizzling, seething, and fomenting that sort of view.
But what they're fighting over, you know, we've been. This is not to say that there's not racial inequities in society, but we're fighting over pretty small potatoes compared to coming out of slavery, for example.
Yeah, coming out. If you compare the rest of the world to what we have here, the comparison should lead a rational person to appreciate the country and what we are. The natural person, the natural man, has a natural environment. It's called chaos. And so without organization and without an organizing principle, without a moral organizing principle, which used to be the basis of this country, you've got nothing but chaos.
Yeah. Okay. So you said these things move in cycles. You see a revival coming. You have any sense?
I really, really don't know. In my little corner of the world, I can tell you that the people who stay at the mission find kinship. They find a respite, they find peace, and it gives that sense of family is something that many of them have never had, ever. I just talked to a lady yesterday who was in foster homes at the age of one because she was sexually abused. And even though she had four younger brothers and sisters, she was always in and out of a home or in and out of some detention, started on drugs at the age of 15. 15 years later, she's a 30-year-old woman, and she's at the mission because she wants to change her life.
And a lot of these people that we should remember, a lot of these people that are have addictions are abuse survivors.
Oh, that's true. That is true. Both men and women. These are people that have for whom life has been a challenge,
a struggle,
and oftentimes it's been through no fault of their own. Mm-hmm. They've been abused from a very, very early age. They've been told that they're stupid, that they're ugly, that they don't amount to anything. Mm. A lot of that has come from their parents.
Yeah.
You know?
Failure. All right. So, well, I mean, to turn it around a little bit, we got Thanksgiving.
Yes, we do. And we got a lot to be thankful for in this country. We can be thankful for the conversations that you and I have without fear of somebody knocking on the door in the depth of night to come re-educate us.
Well, this country is the greatest experiment in the history of politics and religion.
It is.
And so we need to be grateful here. One more time, how do people contact you to it? You know, listening to you, I realize it's not just giving. It's not just donating. The possibility to come down and be a part of the charitable undertaking.
It's being a part of the ministry. We have over 2,000 people. So far this year, 2,000 separate individual people have contributed over 33,000 hours of their time to make a difference in the world.
Address, phone number.
It's 1050 West Amador. The phone number is 523-7727. The website is lcgrm.org. Lcgrm.org is the website. And we try to put the recent news on the website. So go have a look.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for your involvement in the mission. And if somebody likes hearing you talk about these subjects, can they get a hold of you? And
we have a video. Go on the website. There's a little 3-minute video that tells everybody, tells you all about the mission. And we've offered it to the churches in the area so that they can show that during their announcement portion of the service.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, Bob. And folks, time to get involved. It's not too late to help out with.
Not at all. Never too late.
Thanks for coming on, Bob.
You bet. Thanks, Kelly.
Folks, As always, the time flies. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. We're going to take a break. I've got Craig Buckingham. He's going to be coming on with an important announcement. And but give a little bit of help to Bob down there. He's a fun guy, too. I was trying to get him to say he'd talk to you if you called him, but I'm sure that he will. You don't have to watch some dumb video. You can actually talk to him in person. Anyway, we'll be back after the break on the hour.
That's all around.
I do take calls too.
Yes, I need a little water of love.
I
I'm too long for lonely and my heart feels pain. Yes, I need a little crying out for some sympathy.
It's what I appreciate about it. Laid out every day. I'm astonished. Thank you.
Well, 7:06, good morning. And the day before Thanksgiving, so get down there and help that rescue mission if you can, if you have blankets or clothes or canned food or a little bit of help with cash or time. But we've got Craig Buckingham here this morning. And Craig, you have, welcome to the show, by the way.
Thank you. And you
have an important announcement to make.
Yes, sir. We'd like to announce that I will be running for County Commission District 5 next year on the Republican ticket, and I'm going to go ahead and retire in May so I can put my full effort towards the campaign and to being your commissioners.
Cool. All right. So, you must have been thinking about this for a while.
Actually started about spring. A couple people approached me and asked me to run, and I started thinking about it. Obviously talked to my wife, got to get permission first. And once we got that worked out, we were good to go. And so as a retirement time was approaching, I either stay or go. So I made the decision to go ahead and retire and put my efforts into my next step and phase of life and run for county commission to help our community out.
And who is in five? Whose seat?
Right now, the seat is held by Leticia Benavides.
Is she leaving?
She is leaving. She is term limited, so it's an open seat.
Oh, okay. All right. I wonder. Well, that's good. So have you heard anything about anybody else is anybody else throwing their hat in the ring?
On the Republican side, not at this time. And there's been a couple names on the Democratic ticket that I've heard, but I have not heard of them.
All right. So, I know you've been on the show before, but why don't we give people a background on yourself again so that people can get a kind of a sense of who you are, where you came from, where you grew up?
Well, I was born in Fort Hood, Texas, believe it or not, but raised in York, Pennsylvania. I moved out here in 1996 after I got out after 6.5 years in the United States Army as a military police officer. My wife was here. We started dating, got married. I started with the Sheriff's Department in 1996 in July. Worked my way up through the ranks from detective to started with patrol officer, but detective, sergeant. I was even president of the union for a while, then became a lieutenant captain with the sheriff's office, which I'm currently at now.
Cool. All right. So
I think that experience,
yeah, as
working throughout the county,
sure,
from one end to the other, just gives me a good perspective.
Now, I know you were down south for a while.
Correct, sir.
And what was your beat down there?
I covered everything from 2011, January 2011 till February of this year. I covered everything as the patrol division commander, from Chaparral to Santa Teresa, Sunland Park area. Again, is it in my current district that I'm running for? No, but the county commission makes decisions for the entire county. And I think working in all areas of the county gives me a good perspective.
Well, and we've also seen from Ben Rawson one of the things I noticed about him is if he got a call from another district, say somebody had a flood problem,
yeah,
and they couldn't get a hold of their commissioner, the commissioner wouldn't call them back, they'd call Ben, and Ben would set up a meeting. He'd put something together. So that's the kind of leadership we need.
Correct. And for almost 20 years now, that's been one of the biggest complaints I've ever heard throughout the county. You're supposed to be a representative of the people. Therefore, you need to be contacted by the people.
Well, a lot of people think there's been a hippie coup down at the county commission.
I don't want to go that far. I still have to work for the county, but they're going in the wrong direction, and we need to change that. We're spending too much. We're overspending.
Give me a list of some of the things that you think need to be addressed in the county.
Well, three of the platform things that I'm going to be working on is to repeal the comprehensive plan. It's your land. You should be able to do what you want with it.
What is the comprehensive plan for those who may not be aware of it?
It is very big for me to sit here and try to explain it in an hour.
What's the basic principle?
The basic of it is that they're going to try to tell you where and when you can do it, with what you can do with your land. You can only develop 50% of it. And if you're a farmer, that's going to hurt.
That's Agenda 21, which I had written some articles on, and I wrote an introduction for a book for a couple of books for Glenn Beck on this. Agenda 21 is this idea that you can micromanage the whole world.
Correct. And the plan that the county's trying to put forward, it's going to make a lot more government. It's going to put a lot more committees together that is appointed, not elected, to make decisions on other people's property. And to me, that's not good. We need to let the people do what the people want to with their property within the already laws that we have.
You believe in property rights, in other words?
Yes, sir.
So you own something, you should be able to say what happens.
I don't care
if
it's land, your car, your house, it's yours. And, you know, as long as you abide by the criminal aspect of it, mm-hmm. you do the right thing there, and that's your property.
Agenda 21 is a United Nations program that has been adopted by many, many communities across the United States. And if I'm not mistaken, Ken Miyagashima signed us up for ICLEA, which is the companion organization. And so we're on the website there. I mean, but has it brought us any prosperity?
No, sir.
Not really.
No, sir.
So what could you do, Craig Buckingham, to help make us more prosperous?
Well, we're going to, again, start with that, because who wants to come in here and develop and bring business here to create jobs when you got things like that? The other thing is repeal the GRT tax.
All right. And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is Jerry Kelly. Good morning.
Morning, Jerry.
First, I want to say thank you and for your mission guy that you had. That was pretty cool.
Bob Jessica.
And yes, sir. And also, happy Thanksgiving to you and all of Las Cruces listeners.
Hey, Jerry, coming from a real turkey, I appreciate that.
I have a question for Mr. Buckingham, if you would, please.
Go ahead.
And Mr. Buckingham, have you heard of Safe Cities Initiative coming from the president? And if you have, what do you think of it? And I'll hang up and let you answer on the radio and listen in on the radio.
Thanks, Jerry.
Yes, I've heard about the Safe Cities Initiative. I've not researched it a whole heck of a lot. I do know that it's out there and what a little bit of what it's about. I do not agree with it. I think that we need to enforce the laws that we have on the books. We don't need to make any more, but those laws need to be enforced and properly.
Well, you can't argue with that. All right. So there is this idea out there. It's related to Agenda 21, but Agenda 21, if you don't know anything about it, it's a basic outline of how you should use your stuff, how you should use your land, water, power. And the great idea is to move people, you know, farmers and people off of rural areas into the city near places where they work. And the dream of them is to have factories and shops downstairs, and above that, people living above them, so you never have to drive anywhere. You never have, you know, you can walk or take rapid transit. And anyway, it's this idea that a committee somewhere in, I don't know, wherever United Nations meets in Europe or
New York,
New York City or you know, European intellectuals are going to decide how America uses its land. And I mean, it's a very scary proposition because they don't have the same values that we do.
Well, the thing that bugs me about the county commission plan, the comprehensive plan, today it's the land and where you live. What's tomorrow? Is it how you live? Are they going to tell you what doctor to go see? Are they going to tell you who to marry? How many kids you're going to have? I mean, to me, it's the beginning. We need to put a stop to it now.
Well, we have already put up with a fair amount of meddling, and it doesn't seem like it makes our lives any better. It makes them worse.
Mm-hmm.
The less control you have over everyday decision making, the worse your life is.
Correct. And I mean, you put the boundaries, like I said before, to so everybody can live together, but then you let them live within those boundaries. You don't constrict them.
And our boundary is the Constitution.
Correct.
Folks, we got Craig Buckingham here, and we're talking about getting wresting control of our land and our community back from these pie-in-the-sky dreamers. 7:15, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, And we're going to be right back and continue on with Craig Buckingham's exciting announcement. He's running for county commission and his plans. Well, we've got Craig Buckingham here at 7:20, and it is 37 degrees outside right now, a little bit warmer than it was. Safe City, the SAFE Act, you can go to Center for Immigration Studies and find out about this. The SAFE Act, I'll get into it a little bit further, but we are at some level talking about really something that maybe may not have a lot to do with the county commission, but a safe city for immigrants. And we've seen that that's caused what happens when you have a safe city. A safe city is not compliant with federal regulations and laws. And so that's a place where illegals can go. Unfortunately, the top of the list of people that want to make it to a safe city are illegal criminals. I mean, by common sense definition. So careful, you know, if you're feeding animals on your back porch, don't be surprised if one day a bobcat or a mountain lion shows up, you
correct.
Know?
Correct.
With
more of them.
With a dog tag hanging out of its mouth. But, you know, so we got to be careful with this stuff. All right, Craig, what is the potential versus the, you know, what's the potential that we have in this county versus the reality right now? Can you paint a picture for people?
Well, I think we need to do what the people want to do.
We need to do what they want to do. But what could we be? What could this county be? Right. We are underperforming. We're like an 8-cylinder car that's running.
Well,
We're like an 8-cylinder car running on 2 cylinders. How do we get more of our cylinders working?
Well, we are the hub of the southern part of the state. We should be thriving. Everybody should be coming to us instead of driving to Santa Fe to get a lot of their business done.
Absolutely.
And we need to attract that.
Why is it happening? Why is it happening, Craig?
Well, we're raising the sales tax, the GRT tax. I mean, who wants to come and spend more money in taxes when you don't even live here? So, I mean, that if you want that business, you've got to be able to draw it in, and repealing the GRT would be one of those steps.
Would that really help?
I think so. I mean, when you got one of the highest GRT rates in the state, I think we're number 2 now. I mean, plus you're already driving. I mean, we got a big county, you know, so, I mean, why not go somewhere else?
Well, Ben Rawson says, look around at all of the communities around us. Look at those communities. Look at their growth rate, and then look at our growth rate and understand that there's no such thing as a law that doesn't have an impact.
Correct. Correct. And I would agree with that. And you want people to come in, you got the comprehensive plan working against that. You got the GRT working against that. And then more importantly, you've got a spend crazy commission that's overspending, and we're dipping into reserves to cover our budget. I kind of relate it to if you have a job and you make $40,000 a year and you have $15,000 in savings and you spend $50,000 that year, you've got to dip into your savings. What are you going to do the following year? You can't keep deep dipping into your savings. And that's what the commission is doing.
All right. So do you know why? And this was a quote that somebody passed on, and I can't remember if it was public or private, but somebody quoted it was either the statement or at least the intention of the county commission that they were going to spend up all of the rainy day funds, because it was never even explained to me why that needed to happen.
I'm not sure why they want to do that either. I mean, you want to be you want to be preparing for rainy day. Why spend it? I mean, you got to save on it. I mean, you can spend some of it, but you can't spend it all every year. And you can't keep spending and spending and dipping into the reserves.
Well, I mean, you know, I hate to even mention this, but there's a lot of people that are on the left that want the communities to need help from the federal government.
To me, that's not a good policy. We need to go to ourselves and to the best of our ability, a hand up, not a hand out. We can't be dependent on the federal government all the time.
There's two ways to raise taxes. Tax revenues. Mm-hmm. Two folks, remember, two ways to raise tax revenues. The first way is to increase taxation on the economy. The second way is to grow the economy. By right. definition, we'll bring in more tax. What do you think?
I like the second one. We need to grow our economy to get that money flowing in. When you have less restriction on the business owners and the people of the county and farmers and everybody else, it allows them to be creative. It allows them to take the initiative to improve our area.
And could we, I've asked various people who have come on the show, can we grow our economy through a natural process of just being an attractive place for businesses to relocate?
I think we can. I believe we can. I think if we offer something no one else does, like being a hub of the southern part of the state. We're growing Santa Teresa now. We're trying to make one of the biggest inland ports in the nation, or excuse me, in the world. I think that's a good possibility. But we've got to also work on our workforce a little bit. We've got to educate that workforce and have them trained up, because that's one of the things when I was commander down there that I heard. A lot of the workforce was coming out of El Paso.
Why?
Because our workforce wasn't trained up to do the jobs that they were looking for.
How can we get a better trained workforce?
I think there's so many ways to go about it. I think it's a little difficult, but we can have training programs. We can have recruiting programs, trying to move people into the area as well. I think if we work with the colleges and we look at some initiatives for the companies to have their own training program, that would help as well.
All right. And so, you know, there's been a lot of turmoil in the county commission. There's a fight between the sheriff and the county commission. Now, there's an article that came out yesterday that the county commission did an investigation into Sheriff Vigil and found that he hadn't done, I guess, enough wrong to warrant a written report. He claims that is retaliation, and that he's filed his own lawsuit. But do you think you could help address some of the turmoil?
Yes.
How?
By having stronger management, by being more involved in understanding what's going on. And I think I bring that because I worked for the sheriff's department for the county for 20 years here.
Is there some level of politics involved in that?
There is. But the thing for me is I had a sheriff always as a buffer. So I wasn't on the inside, but I was watching. And I think I can bring that perspective to it. I think we need to work on our workforce. I think we need to work on making sure that we manage well and that we have the proper programs in place, whether it be technologies and updated technologies, and, you know, saving money that way, plus making sure that people are held accountable to do their job.
Well, I can't help but think that part of the thing that's kind of this upset Chair Vigil is this struggle between this comprehensive planning, where we're trying to fighting for things that may not even fit our community, like right. large investment in public transit, mass transit, and for things like the sheriff's department, which you can't not spend money on a sheriff's department and still be safe.
Correct. We need to take care of the things that are important first, like our infrastructure, our public safety all around. And then if we have the money left over for enhancements, then we can do it that way.
Yeah.
But to just spend the money when I kind of relate it to you're buying a Ferrari and you can't even afford your house payment.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah. Folks, we're talking to Craig Buckingham. He's just announced he's running for county commission. And 729, you're listening to the AM Las Cruces show on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. 523-1450. We'll be right back.
Red sun going down, way over dirty town. Stalin's air sweeping around, crazy show.
Well, it is 7:32, day before Thanksgiving, and got Craig Buckingham here, and he's with the sheriff's office right now. And all right, so maybe we can have a popular revolution so we can get representative government in this county. Is that possible?
Well, again, one of my biggest things that I've heard since in my entire career was that they get no response. I've even had complaints where they've tried to leave messages for certain commissioners and their voicemail's full. They can't even leave a message. They don't hear back from them when they email them. One of the plans I'm working on right now is trying to set up a visitation time. Like going up to the hatch and then going into Radium Springs and then Doniana, where you can come see me if you want, even if it's at a restaurant, just so you can talk to me and tell me what your concerns are.
Well, and I mean, I think that underlies, underscores a bigger problem that we have in this country, and especially with these leftist leaders, it's not representative of what the people generally believe. So they feel frustrated by the decision making. And then in particular, these leaders are communicating themselves as above and beyond, outside of so brilliant, so insightful, that it would be a waste of time to listen to the average person. The average person doesn't know diddly squat.
Well, I don't agree with that. I think we got a lot of good ideas, a lot of knowledgeable people out there, and it's supposed to be of the people and for the people.
Yeah, the Declaration of Independence says that any government that is not representational in nature is illegitimate and can and must be replaced.
Correct.
So, well, if you get on the commission, there may be some struggle between some of these possibly excessive, possibly progressive elements.
Right. I just want to be able to work together for common sense government. And it doesn't matter who it is. We just need to work together and try to come to a mutual understanding to move us in the right direction. One of the other items I would like to work on is the mental health issue. I did that last year, my last year's campaign. I would like to continue forward with that. We still have the crisis triage center still vacant.
Yes. We can rent it out.
But it's secured behind the detention center area.
Oh, there goes that idea.
Right.
Turn it into a commissary. So if you get elected, are you going to get a golden earring to fit in with the leadership of Billy Garrett? Or?
No, sir. I'm 46 years old. I'm not going to look to change my
nope. No ponytail.
Yeah.
All right. So, there's been it just strikes me, and it's not just the Lynn Allen situation with the county clerk, but it just seems like there's so many problems here, and so many of them don't even make sense.
Right, it's almost like, where do you begin? Mm-hmm. There's so much to work on. Where do you begin?
Well, it would be helpful to have somebody on the county commission who had a sheriff experience.
Yes, sir.
Because then you could actually explain to these guys. You may not understand what they're asking for the money for, but it's necessary for A, B, and C.
Correct. And it's our public safety in general is important.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, if we can get our fire rating up, what's that do for the insurances for the people in the county? Does that make it a little bit more attractive for businesses to bring jobs into the area?
And then maybe we can start selling fireworks again in the...
I don't know about that.
M80s.
Right.
All right, so... So if people were going to say, I don't really see the problems at the sheriff's office in terms of funding, what would you explain to them as one of the things that you'd like to address?
When it comes to public safety in general, it's one of the most important things in the community. You got to have your public safety in place for not only the citizens, but for growth. And I think it's important with the sheriff's office. It just seems like we were never getting what we needed to get. We needed the funding. We couldn't get the funding. We were purchasing cars on grants for so many years. It's almost like they forgot about it. When that went away.
Stone Garden.
Yes. And when that went away, you couldn't purchase units anymore. They didn't pick up the slack. And so here we are, funding. Back in 1998, the city moved forward with collective bargaining. The county didn't. And now look at us. Our guys aren't getting paid right. They need to be paid. Our whole staff, all of our staff,
well,
needs tens to be paid right.
In some cases,
and competitive.
Thousands and thousands of dollars lacking from other local police.
Yes. And I mean, you got this sponge that they put into our budget. You know, we got to fight the sponge. You know, we got to we can't, if it's there, it's there. Give the elected officials their budget and leave it alone. Let the elected officials handle it.
It must have caused a lot of depression and, there must have been some people that were upset when they thought the funding was going to be increased for the sheriff's office and it was supplanted.
That's my understanding right now, that it is being supplanted and that's not appropriate. I mean, they can't do that. They're not supposed to do that.
You know, one of the concerns that people have is that the communication system across the county, and the county is vast,
is
you're not able to get radio communication sometimes when you're out in the hinterlands. And so that's scary.
Yes. Yes. We've been fighting that for years. It's gotten better since I started in 1996, but it's still not where it needs to be. And we still need to get that fixed.
Folks, we're talking to Craig Buckingham. We're going to come back and chat with him a little bit more. He's running for county commission. When is that race? When is that race, by the way?
It'll be next. The general election is in November 6th of 2016.
Okay, we got a year. All right, folks, we'll be right back to continue on 7:38, day before Thanksgiving. I've got a Thanksgiving show put together for you, and all the history of Thanksgiving and a lot of the details that I think you'll find notable. And then the next day is going to be on Syria and Islam and terrorism. So we'll be right back.
Yes, sign a girl is there. I'm feeling out across the square. The wind blows around and the flags upon a pole.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, this is Donna O'Daniel, and I'm calling to thank you so much for having Craig Buckingham on.
You're welcome.
And I was wondering how I can contact him to help him as he's running for county commissioner.
Reach me at our website, our email address, which is craig@votebuckingham.com.
craig@votebuckingham.com.
Yes, ma'am.
Buckingham. Okay. And that's C-R-A-I-G, right?
C-R-A-I-G. Yes, ma'am. And if you would like my cell phone number, it's 575-644-2877.
2877. And I didn't hear the, it's 575-6 what?
644.
644. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Thank you for your support.
We're going to be on the air in about 1 minute. Yeah. Thank you, Rosie.
Hey,
it's Kelly.
It's Kelly.
Hi, this is Rosie. I'll hold.
Okay, I'll put you on hold. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm here with Craig Buckingham, and we do have Rosie on the line. Thanks for calling, Rosie. And you had a question or a comment?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Thanksgiving. Mr. Buckingham,
I
have a question for you. First of all, it seems like the county manager has free rein to spend. We're overspending. I see that. I see that our current commissioners aren't really doing much to stop that. They're dipping into the funds that we're not supposed to. What will you do to stop that?
Well, first of all, the county manager reports to the commission, and that's actually their sole employee. And she follows the direction of the commission. So first thing would have to be we'd have to change our direction. And cutting back our spending and spending within our means is a priority. So we would have to start tightening our belt, making tough decisions, and deciding as a commission, there's five of us, on what we want to spend it on and stay within the confines.
Another thing, Mr. Buckingham, I 100% agree with public safety. It looks like some commissioners have not put that forth. And coming from a military / police family, it's very important to me. And their safety, not only the public, but our officers. What would you do to change that culture that we have here in the county? Because the culture that we have here is not good. And I'm telling you, because I work for the county.
Yes, ma'am.
And it's just, I've experienced that, you know, there is a clique, there is favoritism, there is this, there is that. And it's unfortunate because it starts at the top with Julia Brown. And it seems that the commissioners need to take rein and they need to take the chain and just really limit her power.
Yes, ma'am. The direction from the commission, we don't know what happens behind the scenes on that. But I think you are correct. I, too, work for the county. I've been doing it since, you know, with the Army as an MP, working in the public safety field. What we would do is we would start using by our spending and making sure our spending is for public safety and that we do it right. Like I was talking about earlier, we need to work on our fire rating. How do we work on our fire rating? We work on getting more firefighters that are employed and paid for so we could have a better response time. We work with the Sheriff's Department to make sure their response times are good as well in keeping everybody safe. Then we look at the ambulances. There's only like 6 ambulances in the entire county. We need to redo the contract and have coverage for there.
Absolutely, Mr. Buckingham. I agree totally on you. I like what you're saying, and I hope that your listeners, Kelly, are listening. And we need change, and I hope that you win, Mr. Buckingham.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Help us spread the word.
Absolutely. Have a great day. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy
guys.
Thanksgiving. Thanks for the call. Great call. All right. What's happening behind the scenes? Could it be hot tubs and champagne supernovas?
No, I don't think it's quite that bad.
I'm just asking if the county commission proposed a trip to memorialize Woodstock for the members, would you support that?
Negative.
Okay. All right. Just asking.
I'd rather keep that money here and put it back into our community.
So, all right. So some of the concerns that April is addressing, could you embellish a little bit more on those?
Well, I mean, everybody likes to feel protected and feel safe. And if your response times are down, and it's not a knock on the current system, it's just a fact of life. Daytime people are at work; they're volunteers.
You can only have you can only use what you have. And I mean, if we've got a communication system that doesn't quite reach across the county, and if guys are pulling double and triple shifts and ladies. And the equipment is not new, it's rebuilt or whatever, you're going to have a higher failure rate. This just goes without saying.
Yes, and we've been very fortunate over the years that we've managed it, but it doesn't mean that we're not going to come across a failure at some point.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if you can't, in law enforcement, if you can't get the help and you need help, you're going to get hurt. Or they're going to have to make decisions that get someone else hurt.
Craig, why has this gone on for decades, this kind of...
I've wondered that myself.
You know, the hind teat belongs to the Sheriff's Department.
I've wondered that myself for years. We've had different politicians in play.
Some people blamed it on Todd Garrison, but now we see that it's an incident.
It's been going on since I've been here.
Yeah.
In 1996, we've had different politicians. We've had different county managers. Maybe we need to look at the middle management and or is things being held up in that middle management area? I'm not quite sure, but it's something we need to look at when we get in there and take a closer look at.
Absolutely. We'll take one last break here, and we've got lucky to have Craig Buckingham here who came to this show. He saved it for this show. to